The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Kerr is brought to us by Xfinity. Supercharge your home with supersonic Wi-Fi, unbeatable internet only from Xfinity. And all of our guests join us on the Bud Light guest line. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you here on a Friday. You guys were busy this week, and obviously the road trip didn't end like you wanted it to. Couple of tough breaks in overtime, and then the always headache of a back-to-back in Denver. It caught up with you guys both nights.
Yeah, well, you know, you can look at the schedule and know that Denver game is going to be tough, but it's our fault for making it tougher than it should have been, because we got to win that Minnesota game. And if we do that, we're heading to Denver with a 2-0 mark on the trip, then we're in great shape. And then, you kind of have a freak swing, and you never know what happens. So the Minnesota game is the one that that really is going to haunt us for a while, and we got to move past it. But that was really kind of an unforgivable loss.
Yeah, that was definitely a tough one. There have been a couple times this season where you have said in your pre or post game press conference that it feels like we're about to turn a corner and rattle off a 10 game stretch that we're going to be really proud of. And then that doesn't happen. Does it feel like these last two games had sort of reset your GPS to how quickly you are to turning a corner after all?
No, I mean, I still feel good about our prospects and our team and our ability to go on a run. It's just frustrating when we continue to give up really golden opportunities to sort of kickstart that run that we're talking about. And somehow we've got to just keep pushing forward and keep just getting better and trying to figure out, how we can close out games, especially because feels like we've kind of given away, five or six games this year and not closed out another five or six on top of that we could have won. So it's really been a frustrating season in that regard. I think we should be better than what we are.
When you say that, every other year you either had very good players who could do all the things you were asking for, or you had injuries that essentially took away every player you had. Has this been a lot harder on you than you thought it would be because you can't get the one thing that you'd become accustomed to the other years that you've coached?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think every year is unique, and I'm very aware of how fortunate we were, say, 5-6 years ago to have, one of the great rosters in the history of the league. And I'm very aware that our margin for error is much slimmer now. And yet, we were able to win the championship last year. So I still believe in the group, and I still believe that we can get there. But it's not hard on me. I enjoy what I do, and I look at it as a challenge, and I can't wait to get to practice every day, and I love game nights, and so I'm still excited every day, and it's more about just trying to help the guys get over the hump for their sake and for our fans' sake, but in the meantime, I love what I do.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. So how do you coach someone whose career has been built on speed and athleticism to slow down? In the ultimate John Wooden saying, the be quick but don't hurry. How do you coach that in to someone who has officially played enough NBA games now in Jordan Poole to understand what that means and still ask him to do it? And it's amazing how this even still applies to Klay Thompson at times and Steph Curry at times. I mean, late game execution right now is a criticism that falls right on the veteran side of your locker room.
Well, I think it's, coaching is about teaching and practicing and really reiterating messages and then doing it over and over and over again. It's a good team builds good habits. And I think our team has always been a little wild, but the wildness was offset by not only great talent, but I think also a lot of veteran players who have helped tame and corral some of that talent. I think what's interesting with this group and this team is that we've still got a lot of talent. We've got a lot of veterans, but they're almost having to do the job themselves. I'm talking about Steph and Clay and Draymond, and that game in Minnesota was a good example. They needed to recognize mid fourth that where the game was, what the game required. And they're at the positions in their careers where, they've got to recognize it, and they know this. I've talked to them about it. They've got to do a job that maybe they didn't have to do 5 or 6 years ago. But that's the evolution of our team, and that's the evolution of our players.
Given that the trade deadline is next week, do you find that you have to spend more time talking to players to sort of, ease their concerns about whether they might get moved or not? Or has that never really been a problem that you've had, that your team's been stable enough that you haven't had to worry about that?
Yeah, I generally will have a few conversations every year around the trade deadline with guys whose names are being mentioned. I just try to be as transparent as possible with guys, and if they have any questions or thoughts, I'd like to be there to to listen to them, and that's part of the job. And I think one of the things I try to do every year, even at the beginning of the year, is just remind all of our players that the deal in the NBA is you get this amazing job, dream job, and you get paid a lot of money, and it's exciting. And then also the flip side, that what comes with that is, all the things that are tough: getting traded, getting cut, getting injured, getting booed, and this is all part of it. And so, for young players, it's really the first time they've had to face this. For vets, they have a better understanding, but that's how it goes. But within all that, you're trying to maintain a really, positive culture and an environment the players want to be in. And so it can be tricky when things are not going well.
Steve Kerr here on Damon and Ratto. So you have talked to us years about the excellent working relationship that you and Bob Myers have together. There is total transparency. The two of you work hand in glove. How does this week work for the two of you? Will there be, maybe an unscheduled breakfast meeting Monday, Tuesday, as you get closer to the deadline? Or are you guys going to spend more time around each other this week with a deadline looming? Can you tell us about the process that you guys will go through this week?
Yeah, I mean, every year is a little different based on the schedule, but given that we are home this week, Bob and I will definitely sit down, probably early in the week, just to go over whatever's happening, whatever's out there, if there is something out there or not, and he'll fill me in on that, and then I go back and do my job, and he does his, and that's about it. So, I mean, generally, we haven't had, we had the one big one for Wiggs a couple of years ago at the trade deadline. Other than that, we've had very quiet trade deadline periods, and so I don't really expect anything to happen. I don't anticipate anything happening, but you always have to be prepared for it.
Because you don't think that anything's going to happen, or you have a pretty good sense that not much is going to happen, do you not listen to the noise about other teams, like the Kyrie Irving news today? And I'm not asking you to comment on it, but does any of that interest you except as an academic exercise? Do you try to sort of shut that out till the deadline's over?
I look at it as just any fan would look at it. You know, it's more just out of interest. It doesn't affect our business at all with the Warriors. I'm like everybody else. I wake up and, you know, read the NBA news and follow it, but it doesn't really factor into, you know, to my job.
Steve, is it a question of can't or won't in terms of improving some of the sloppy play or the focus on defense? If this is indeed the team that you have, I mean, is it safe to conclude that you think without a move, you have the right team to defend an NBA championship with, and that when the playoffs start, the light will indeed come on and we will once and for all bury the notion of a regular season being important at all in this league?
No, I still believe that we can do this, and I tell the players that almost every day, and it's authentic. We do have things we've got to improve on, and you know we're down to 30 games left in the season, so we need to take those steps now. But I still feel like we can do them, and I think our team is not afraid of anybody. I think given our experience and our history in the playoffs, our guys have a ton of confidence. But we got to do a better job, especially closing games. But I think just overall in general, the coaching staff too, you know, we've got to settle on some rotations and figure out exactly how we're going to put this puzzle together the best way that we can, because it's still not clear. And, you know, while that is disconcerting, I still believe that it can be done.
One of the obviously literal biggest pieces you guys have to consider is James Wiseman. 17 minutes for James Wiseman last night in his first game in more than a month. What'd you think?
He was great. Yeah, James did a really nice job. And it wasn't surprising because he puts the work in, and, you know, he's still... Even though he hasn't been playing in games the last week or so, he's been working hard every day in practice. Our guys scrimmage, we've seen the improvement and we know it's coming. So it's unfortunately, you know, for him and for us, we're just, you know, in a time where everything is put under a microscope, and so he's, you know, he's just a guy, because of where he was drafted and his size and abilities, people are going to constantly talk about everything with him, and that's part of the package for him. But in the meantime, he's putting in the work and he's getting better.
It is the nature of the way the Western Conference is, where you're essentially a game and a half out of fourth and a game and a half out of 13th, even this late in the year. Does that change the way you look at, boy, we'd better have our stuff taken care of by game X, that it's going to be so chaotic that you can't really even set a date like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us really think that way in terms of, you know, some linear objective, like we've got to be in this spot by that date or whatever. We just try to get better, you know, every night, every day, try to move forward and win the next game. And that's what made that Minnesota game so disappointing, is that we felt like we had made strides. We've been in a pretty decent place, and we had that game in our grasp, and it would have been a big win, and we don't get it. So we just got to keep going.
In a year where consistency is hard to find for you guys, the one thing that has been consistent is you're much better at home. You got four of your next five at Chase Center. So hopefully this is another one of those here comes the corner that they turn around moments for you guys as it's all coming up. By the way, you'll have the Lakers at home the Saturday before the Super Bowl. And unless LeBron James scores 63 points between now and then, which absolutely is probably almost certain to happen, The biggest moving circus in sports might come to Chase Center as he tries to pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the number one all-time scorers list. How much would you prefer to avoid that?
I haven't really given it much thought. How many games do they have before ours?
So they've got New Orleans, Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Milwaukee Bucks. He needs 63. He probably gets that in three.
Yeah, probably taken care of by that time. So, I think that's, neither here nor there. I mean, on the one hand, you always love being, part of something special, and that this is an accomplishment that is incredibly special and unique. On the other hand, let's just go win the game. So who cares?
Right. Can you imagine? I mean, this is one of those records that, we used to talk about how that's one that you can put into the might never be broken category. And here it indeed is. I was thinking about this today. Steve, you played with Jordan. You played with Duncan. You played against Kobe and Magic and Larry Bird. You coached Steph Curry. You have coached and have coached against LeBron James. I mean, that's easily 7 of the 15 greatest basketball careers and players ever that you have been around in a significant way throughout your career. If you were asked to put on a symposium, a seminar about being around greatness, how to coach a great player, like, what's some advice you would pass along to the next generation of coaches dealing with the next generation's great player?
Oh, it's a good question, because coaching is a lot different now than it was when I played. I think just based on the way we live our lives today with social media, with fan reactions, with the size of a story that maybe wouldn't have been a story 25 years ago. Maybe you back in the day, if your starters aren't playing well and the bench is going well and you leave the bench out there and you don't put the starters back in, it really wasn't that big of a deal. Today, it leads off every sports morning show, the next day, and it's controversy. So-and-so didn't put the stars back in. Is there a rift? All this stuff. So it's dramatically different. And so you're managing not just people, but expectations and sort of societal norms. It's really tricky. And you're still trying to boil it down to just coaching a basketball team and getting a group of guys to execute together. But I think it's a lot more complex now than it's ever been.
It probably isn't something that you have to do often, because they're great players, and you'd think that great players pretty much take care of themselves. Or is that like wishful thinking? And is there actually more support and encouragement than we would ever imagine need to be applied to a great player? And how often do you actually have to reel someone in who ticks that box of great player, like where you have to manage them being less of an ego, which I know Steph is an amazing situation. By the way, happy MJ Day 2/23/23. For those who observe, Steve, I don't know how you're celebrating, but how much different was it to be around his level of greatness as opposed to Steph's?
Well, I mean, the similarities are the work ethic and just the daily commitment to winning, the obsession with winning, just willing to do anything to give yourself a better shot. But every individual is different. I think one of the reasons the quality of the human being factors in so much to winning. I mean, you look at historically, whether it's Tim Duncan or Michael, or in the modern day, you look at Steph, you look at LeBron, you look at Giannis, in all of these cases, and I certainly watched it with Phil and Michael in Chicago. And so there's a collaboration that goes on with the coach, and there's an awareness from the coach that that player, even though he's a star, he still needs coaching. You know, he still needs, because he's a human being, and we're all vulnerable. We all, kind of need help to get where we want to go. I mean, nobody does it by themselves. And in every case, even in individual sports, it's still a team effort. You know, tennis players, golfers, they got their teams behind them. And so I think even the best players on earth understand that, and that the quality of their character means that they're willing to embrace that collaboration, and that changes everything. And that's why I'm so blessed to coach the guys I do, you know, here in Golden State, and why we've been so lucky, you know, this past decade to watch this team, because of the quality of the human beings involved.
As a general rule, and I know every player and every coach are different, how many years does it take to develop that kind of a relationship where you could say, well, by year four, we should pretty much know each other about as well as we're ever going to? Or is that an unreasonable thing to do, trying to put a date on that too?
Yeah, you seem to love these math equations, Ray. You're more science than art, aren't you?
I'm neither.
Fair enough. I think it just depends. I mean, Steph Curry, it felt like it took about 2 months to build a relationship with him. But he's an incredibly welcoming, open, vulnerable human being. And you know, most people aren't like that in the NBA or just in life. So it always depends on the individual, and and part of your job as a coach is to try to connect with everybody at a certain level, and that's one of the things that makes it fun. Everybody's so different, and you try to connect with each guy however that needs to happen.
Was there a definitive moment where you felt that you earned the trust of Michael Jordan as a teammate?
Yeah, not until I hit the shot in the finals to win game six in 97, and he actually said it after the game, you know, and I remember, you know, he said something like, well, you know, Steve earned my trust tonight, and I thought to myself, man, I thought I had done that a couple of years ago, but apparently not, you know, but the standard was pretty high. The bar was pretty high with that guy.
Well, you've set a pretty darn good standard for yourself, man. And this is, like you said, a 30-game sprint to the finish. And I just want to make sure that I've heard you correctly. We don't want to misquote you. You believe the Golden State Warriors can repeat as NBA champions, as built tonight?
Yeah, 100%. That is absolutely something I believe, and that's what we're working on. That's the plan.
Cut, print, that's the interview. Steve, thank you very, very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. All right. See you guys.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.